Well, one day is Thursday, January 15th, 2026, and this is the week in charts. I just want to thank all you guys and girls for attending. I'm still working through a few glitches. Seems like same as it ever was. But hopefully some of these things will improve. I do have a ticket in on a couple of issues, but hopefully they'll improve over time. DaveLearner.com/webinar. If you ever have any difficulties, you can always email me for the direct link to the show. But anyway, thank you guys for attending. What are we talking about? Well, current market conditions, obviously, I have a lot to say about that. Your questions on trading, you can just type those in as we go. Your favorite stock in crypto picks, just add USD if it's crypto, so I know what it is. Now, again, I want to talk about the missing piece, and that's actually seeing somebody recommend a trade, plan the trade, and then trade the plan. And that'll make a lot more sense in a few minutes. That's the methodology in action. And then I want to continue with the New Year's resolution. I want to do a recap on last week. I felt like just a lot of stuff was kind of hitting the fan right as I was putting it all together. And I want to do a brief recap on that. I also want to explain inefficiency and efficiencies when it comes to markets and a few other things as it relates to the methodology. Now, disclaimer screen, as you know, you can lose money trading, or as often summing up, all predictions are about the future. And a lot of stuff could happen between now and then. There's all my contact information again. You can also reach me at dave@davelandry.com. Feel free, obviously, to shoot a screenshot. All right, as I've said ad nauseum, the missing piece for me very early in my career was actually seeing someone make trades and talk about the trade they're going to trade, take the trade, and see the whole process, as opposed to some guru cherry picking some setup that made them a bunch of money and they're like, hey, look at me. All right, so let's talk about the methodology in action. Now, when I'm putting these slides together, I go to DaveLearner.com/archives and I actually go to this page, my own page, and I grab archives for the service. So this particular one, if you go back to 12/19/25, you'll see the glue setup, okay? Anyway, we talked about this one last week, and we'll come back to it a few times. There's a lot of lessons here. But it was a nice little Langelite pullback. Entry was here, stop was here, also a TKO, trend knockout. Initial profit target was up here. Now, initially, it didn't do a whole lot. It triggered in for days and days and days, began to implode. As I discussed last week, I just so happened I got criticized for this because we were losing money on it, right? And, well, it happens, okay? And sometimes you just get outright stopped out. But in this particular case, biotech was looking fantastic. And right when we bought in, turned out to be a temporary top in biotech. And biotech overall began to implode. So it's very, I suppose, longer term, it's okay to compare yourself to what's going on in the market. But shorter term, it happens, right? And in this particular case, it's like, well, biotech imploded, so why wouldn't my stock implode? And that's the other thing I was kind of thinking about before going live is, a lot lately, is that you really have no control in all this, okay? You have to control what you can, accept what you can't. It's a serenity prayer type of thing. Yes, you want to make sure you've got a really good looking setup going in. You want to make sure you're in sector that's doing really well. And ideally, you want that market to be doing well too. And as long as the stock trades cleanly and you could justify your setup, last week I talked about sell me on your setup. And I think I use this one as a walkthrough as to why I liked it. And you just have to let the chips fall where they may. Now, in this particular case, it was very hard not to want to exit. Believe me, I wanted to exit. I'm like, screw this. I don't feel like letting it go another $400. Plus, I had a bigger position in other accounts, you know, so it was a lot of money on the line. And it's quite stressful to be in a trade about a week or so, or I think it was 7 or 8 days and trading days. So about 2 weeks of calendar days. And to stare at such a big loss, but you really have to let the chips fall where they may. Now, the stop on this is a little higher than it should be or based on the price movement. But actually, stop should be all the way up to where the entry is because it did hit the initial profit target. But anyway, it came dangerously close to hitting that stop, and then it made a $2,800 swing. Now we have a mystery chart reveal. This is an IPO, and it really took off, and then it made the deep retracement. That's a pattern I call a first deep retracement. There's all the parameters, entries here, stop is down here. This is probably target up here. And it's MDLN. So let's take a look at it. Didn't trigger for a few days. Kind of took off after it triggered, but then came right back in. And now it's working its way back to new closing highs. That fee just crashed. So we'll see how it works out. The great thing about IPOs, in fact, I actually have a pattern based on just that, is when you have a new closing high in IPOs, often they follow through. And that's because everyone who owns it is at a profit. Now, for the buy and be pattern, ideally you want the IPO to be a little bit less than, or no higher than at least $30 a share. Somewhere around $30 is kind of the max on that. Initially, it was a $20 rule. I called it. But I find that once they're above now $30, the buy at B doesn't work quite as well, and you're better off waiting for the first deep retracement or your first setup or your first pullback, whatever the cases be or maybe or however you want to look at that. But anyway, so far it's doing okay. Let's not start kissing each other just yet. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about today, and I want to flesh out all these different nuances as time allows, but one thing I want to talk about is the fact that your margin equity changes with the money management, okay? And that'll make sense as soon as we walk through this. So in this particular case, this was KGC, a gold stock we're long. It took a while to get there. Now, this is a great testament for following the plan, not micromanaging. And a few of these things will become resolutions, obviously, for upcoming presentations. But anyway, it took a long, long, long time to get to the IPT, for KGC to get the IPT. Easy for me to say. But then, fortunately, it took off, and we've been trailing the stop higher ever since. Now, if we back up to the beginning of the trade and take a look at it, it was 1,000 shares at like 14 and change or so. So right here, you put up $14,000 in margin, $14,600 in margin, which is a significant amount per 100K. So that's 14.5% of your account in one stock. That's a little scary, okay? But it's manageable. And when you hit the initial profit target, you sell half. So now your margin is down to $8,250 plus you have $1,000 in banked profit. So you could kind of look at it. If you look at it as a whole piece, the whole trade as a piece, you could take that off the margin because you have the money. Now, what's interesting is, if you are fortunate, and this is the secret sauce right here. The secret sauce is the money management, the letting that stop widen out over time, and then taking half the profits initially, just in case it doesn't. And what's kind of cool is if you get into a stock that's fairly low priced, that doubles like a case like this or more, then you have a sizable position on. So you've got 500 shares. That's $16,000, $17,000 in margin, so to speak, in this stock. Now, $10,000 or $11,000 of that is profits. So it depends on how you want to look at it. If you look at the whole piece, you've got $5,000 total risk out there, okay? But technically, it is $16,000. So the point I'm trying to make here, or one of the points I'm trying to make here, is that through the money management, your margin increases and decreases. You're taking risk off, okay? But we don't scale after the second low. And in some cases, I will, okay? Like, for instance, there was a crazy IPO. It's now halted. God knows where it's going to open, probably at zero. But I took profits at the initial profit target, and then I peeled off some more shares when it was going absolutely crazy. It's a Lester Love, who I mentioned last week, you know, let them have it type of trade. And of course, in hindsight, I wish I'd peeled off a little bit more, but I thought it was prudent at the time. It was just so much money. Whenever you're just counting your money and you feel like, oh man, I could go do this, I could go do that or whatever. Well, don't go do this or don't go do that. But if it's something ridiculous over a short period of time, and the numbers were ridiculous on this particular stock, it just went straight up as an IPO, that it's like, you know, I'd be kind of stupid not to peel off a few thousand dollars here. This is just a gift horse. And that doesn't happen that rarely. So I really don't have an official plan for it. It's a very good problem to have. And I suppose next time we get in one and it goes straight up and goes up several hundred percent over a few days or whatever, or whatever, a few weeks, I guess, we might think about scaling out of a little bit of it. But one point, or the main point I'm trying to make here, is that you're taking risk off, but the risk does increase. Open risk, I suppose, does increase over time. And keep in mind that I'm kind of backing into something else too, but keep in mind that open profit drawdowns come with the territory, okay? And Richard Dennis was okay with the turtles having open profit drawdowns, because if you're following the system, you will have a lot of open profit drawdowns. And by scaling out, we help to mitigate those a little bit, but they still can be substantial, especially over time. But the point I was trying to get to with this is that sometimes when you catch a stock at relatively low levels and you got on like 1,000 shares per 100K and it doubles or more, then you start to have a pretty sizable position on. And yeah, the open profit drawdown is going to suck, but if it keeps on keeping on, knock on wood, like this one has, and the other gold stock too that we're still long, then you could actually make a substantial amount of money. So if you think about it, this one stock has increased your portfolio. If we're keeping the math round with 1,000 shares per 100K in this particular case, it might be fewer shares if you have a wider stop, or will be fewer shares, a wider stop. In this case, pretty serious position, right? Still have 500 shares on, which is still a lot, but you made about $11,000. So that's 11% on your account. And I use the 100K number to keep the math easy. And I also run a model account of my own that's right around that level to show that I do the trades and to feel your pain, so to speak, and feel your elation too. But anyway, so that's the point I was trying to make, that you're scaling off, but you still have a substantial amount of position, even though you took shares off in the long run. Now, yeah, it'd be great if you knew it was going to go up this much and this long, then by all means, just hang on. But you don't know these things. If I knew that IPO was going to get halted and probably go to zero, obviously I'd have cashed out of all of it. Okay, so hindsight obviously is 20/20. And that's a big part of this game, is not getting too caught up in hindsight. And there's a whole science kind of around this, behavioral science. And there's actually a book written about them, and I'm trying to think who wrote it, but it's called The Undoing Project. And basically the point is that you make different decisions in hindsight, obviously. It's kind of like the Captain Hindsight character my nephews introduced me to a couple of weekends ago. You know, the building's on fire, then Captain Hindsight flies in. It's like, I would have put more fire escapes on that side of the building, and they need whatever fire suppressors over here. You know, thank you, Captain Obvious, Captain Hindsight. But you will make some different decisions in hindsight, obviously. And that's a lot of trading. It's just going back to the original trade, looking at what you did, making sure that the setup was there, the trend was there, the pullback or whatever you're trading, etc. And letting the chips fall where they may. Now, one thing I wanted to address this week is efficiency and inefficiency, okay? And this gentleman wasn't having my performance, but he didn't take these two gold stocks, which inspired me to put the sharpshooting signals resolution, like don't sharpshoot signals. And if you look at the stocks in the portfolio, he said the stocks don't follow through. Well, and he didn't take those two. Well, one's up 70%, one's up 128%, okay? So we've been in these stocks since May. So what's that? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 8 months, okay? So 8 months, that's pretty good follow through, triple digit and high double digit follow through over 8 months. That's pretty good. Now, this exemplifies what I'm looking for, okay? I'm looking for an inefficiency in a market, something that's not priced in, okay? And the glue here, obviously, is another case of inefficiency. It's up 40%, and we've only been in it a week or so, or 2 weeks, I guess, now. Now, the thing to realize is you cannot beat the market with stocks that don't move more than the market. The HV right now in S&P 500 is about 12. HV is historical volatility. It's an annualized type of measurement, and I'll show you how little I know about statistics if I go into too many details. But the bottom line is there's a two-thirds chance or two standard deviations or whatever that the market will be within that range, okay, on an annualized basis. So that's where the S&P is trading now based on the HV. And don't quote me on all this because there's a lot of caveats, but technically from a statistical standpoint, it should be 12% higher or 12% lower. There's a two-thirds chance of it being one of those, okay? Now, you can't predict off of that, but it does kind of tell you what the market did in the past. And if it continues to behave like that, it's going to behave like that in the future. So we have to find stocks that are inefficient, okay? And by the way, whenever I hear somebody talking about money management or something like inefficiency and efficiency, it's like I know that that person gets markets and understands markets. And I would encourage you to fully understand volatility and efficiency and inefficiencies and seek out those inefficiencies, okay? As a general statement, thinner, more volatile stocks tend to be more inefficient, okay? And then thicker stocks, less volatile, thicker stocks tend to be more efficient. But every now and then, an efficient market, especially like on the short side, okay, can make a very inefficient move because everybody just believes the stock is going to go up forever and everything's fine and millions and millions and millions of people are in it and trading it, and millions of institutions or institutions have billions and billions of dollars in it. And then all of a sudden, everybody begins running for the door at the same time. Now, that's one of the dangers of trading an efficient stock, is that something bad can always happen. But with an inefficient stock, you know, it's the devil you know. You know it's going to move around a lot. You know it's going to be volatile. So you compensate accordingly, okay? And that's why I wrote the article a while back, or a few years ago, Better the Devil You Know. And that's talking about volatility. And I went on to show that I think you're better off trading inefficient stocks and more volatile stocks, okay? And I think they're actually less risky in the long run than trading more shares of a less volatile stock because something bad can always happen. Now, you don't just want to rush out and trade something that's volatile because you say, oh, well, Dave said it's going to be inefficient or whatever. You want volatility plus structure, okay? Now, if you take a look at this glue, okay, so you want to seek the inefficiency through volatility with structure. So in this particular case, the HV now is 116, which is pretty darn high, but we'll take a look at it before. But you can see that this stock was in a really nice uptrend. Okay, the percent move was just ridiculous, okay, from down by the lows or whatever. And it was very persistent. You could draw a line through many of the bars, and the bars that don't intersect your line, the majority of them are above the line you're drawing, okay? And that's just persistency, as I preach. That's mathematically equivalent to linear regression. And then you got a nice little Langer-like pullback / trend knockout, TKO. Now I went back and looked. The H rate was 91 on that day. Now, sometimes, excuse me, once you get close to triple digits in historical volatility, stocks do get very erratic, okay? And like the gentleman said, stocks are erratic. They don't follow through. It's like, well, you will have a little bit of that problem, but if you have structure and you're willing to live, it's like better the devil you know. Again, I better not name anyone, but I ran across some people who have really bad tempers, you know, and or behave a certain way. Take it to someone in general, and it's like every time they visit, my wife gets upset, and I'm like, well, he didn't break character, you know? It's like, what do you expect? And what's weird is people get in these volatile stocks, and they think that tomorrow, you know, the day they get in, it's going to stop being volatile. But it doesn't work that way. So you have to understand the behavior of what you're trading. Also, you'll notice a lot of times I use these stops that seem kind of wide, all right? Percentage-wise, I don't remember what this one was, but it's in the portfolio. I think it's going to come up in a minute, and we'll take a look at it. But percentage-wise, the stop seemed pretty big, but we compensated, obviously, by trading fewer shares. People get caught up in the percentage risk, and a lot of people won't take trades. Like sometimes if something's very volatile, it might be a 30% stop. But a 30% stop might be like right here, you know? And obviously, as you can see, that's what it called for. But a lot of people are like, oh, I can't use no 30% stop. It's like, well, you don't get no coke, is what I've said many, many times before. But you're compensating to bring your risk way down, or down to 2,000 per 100K, or 2% per whatever your account size is, obviously. So that'd be a $2,000 loss if stopped out. Now, I grabbed the Landry 100 yesterday to show you the HVs of some of these stocks. So here's a stock that has 850, has gained 853% since it was added to the Landry 100 on 428, okay? And you can see that the HV is now at 78. Now, I imagine if we went back in time, it was probably 40 or 50 back then. But you can see the HVs, here's almost a 300% move, 128 in HVs. So these HVs are pretty darn high, okay? Now, if some of these were to trend in a very persistent manner, and maybe that ARMN, because gold's been so persistent as trend, the HV will actually drop off if something is persistent in its trend. So maybe that's why those are fairly low, or not, you know, 40's not that low. The market right now, just for reference, is about 12. So again, I firmly believe if you want to beat the market with 800% gains, okay, that doesn't happen often, but it can happen, as you can see here, at least in this list is hypothetical, but all of these were put in exactly on the date that I'm showing, okay, on the close of that date, and that's how it's measured. So these stocks have fairly high to very high HV readings, and so you're seeking out an inefficiency, and that's where the money is, okay? All right, any questions on inefficiency or anything along those lines? Okay. Last week, I started trading resolutions, and I went back in and looked at everything, and I want to do a little bit of a recap on some of the things that were said for the first five, and then we'll get to the next five this week. So last week I said I will see each position to its fruition. So in this particular case, again, coming back to this glue trade, you could see it was almost stopped out, and then fortunately it took off. And that story I've told many times before, it always reminds me of I shorted Dow years ago, and then they eventually cooked the books, and the stock went down to single digits. I shorted at 55 or 50 something, and I remember my stop was at 55. I didn't have a hard stop yet. I just had a mental stop, so to speak. Well, you got to be careful with mental stops. They can make you go mental, right? But anyway, it got to 54 7/8, and that's the highest that it got. But while it was, I didn't know that was going to be the high tick. But at 54 7/8, it was only 1/8 away from my top, and I'm like, well, surely that stop's going to get hit. So I sold it, and I don't think it had a lot, but I bought back, I guess. I was short. And I got my father out too, and then we both watched it drop to single digits. So there's a case, a testament for following your plan. In this particular case, now they don't always happen, right? But I had another, $300 and something ago, and then much more in other accounts. But in this particular account, my model account, I remember looking at those losses. And boy, it's tough. It's tough to sit through that. And you know that many times, if you sit through it, you will get stopped out. But occasionally, you won't when they're getting this close to getting stopped out. And that one little outlier might make your entire year. So anyway, that's another testament for seeing each position to its fruition. So one thing I was thinking about is the time to obsess about a trade is before you make it. And I probably need to do a whole resolution just on micromanagement. But as I was putting the slide together, it reminds me of a friend of mine was moving away. I met him through brewing, which I no longer do just because we moved out of the country and half my garage was a brewery. Anyway, it's kind of another story in and of itself, but he told me a story of the guy that bought his brew equipment or some heavy equipment, like an old fridge and a bunch of kegs and stuff like that. And he loaded it up into this guy's truck. He helped the guy load the truck. I know who the guy is, and he's poor as a church mouse. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot of money, younger kid, but he was getting into brewing at the time. And as he's closing up his tailgate or whatever, he looks over to my buddy, and he says, I think the guy wanted like 164. David, my friend David, wanted 164, and the other guy's like, would you take 140? And then he said, the time to negotiate is before you have me help you load your truck. And I'm like, well, you know, so I felt bad for the guy, you know, I would hear the story. Because I know he didn't have any money. I said, well, did you take $20 off? He says, no. I'm like, okay. So the time to second guess a trade is before you make it. And as I've said before, obsess before going into a trade, not afterwards. Now, if you are obsessing during a trade, make it through that one trade, okay? And follow your plan through that one trade. And then afterwards, it's like, make better decisions. I mean, how many times have you gotten stopped out of a trade and then say, I knew I should have taken that trade, okay? And legitimately, you knew you should not have taken that trade. I'm gonna circle back to that. Knowing what you should do and doing it anyway. I think that's Paul actually said that. I learned that from a client once. It said, I feel like Paul. She said, I know not to do these things, but I do them anyway. The second one, resolution I talked about last week, I will gladly accept what the market is offering. And I got a complaint on this stock. It went up 28% in one day and stopped out. And I'm like, well, you know, I'll take 28% in one day, any day of the year, and every day of the year. Now, if that happened every day of the year with $100, if you only had $100 and you compounded that, this is how big your account would be at the end of the year. So accept what the market is giving and move on. Don't sharpshoot signals. You know, he said he missed these two trades. Well, without those two trades, you would be doing okay, but you wouldn't be doing fantastic, okay? And he complained about the glue trade, so I'd be willing to bet he left that too. That's $2,800 per 100K, so that's another 2.8% gain. So you have to make sure you're not sharpshooting signals. It's kind of like, you open up the PC and there's a cat in there, you know? Well, there's your problem. Now, you need to fully understand and embrace the nuances of my methodology or your methodology, whatever you're trading, okay? So as I preach often, it can be streaky, okay? Something I was told not to say, but because I make it sound too elusive, but it is, okay? Sometimes it's just streaky. And the money does come in chunks, and you must be present to win. And all those things I talked about last week and then every other webinar prior to that. So you need to fully understand and embrace your methodology. If it's normal for your methodology, you know, I always use the example of dentists. Okay, they were doing longer term trend following on the breakout strategy, the turtles. And Dennis was totally okay with an open profit drawdown. People were probably fired for the program. I know somebody was called in based on Curtis' Facebook about the turtles. But somebody was called in because they didn't take a trade that turned out to fail miserably, but the trade fit the system that they were following. And the guy had a justification. Oh, well, you know, once I get 3 pages of analysis done, that I don't take any trades after that or whatever. And, you know, Dennis wasn't fully sure of the guy's explanation, but he kept his job at least. So you need to really learn the nuances and live with them. Living with them is tough, I have to admit. And that goes for any methodology. I mean, let's say you're trading reversion to the mean and you make money for 8 months in a row or 8 years in a row, right? And then one day you come and you blow up. Well, that's it. That's, you know, that comes with the territory, okay? I will only take FYE trades, so make sure you're taking those 11s. And hopefully every mystery chart I show you here has persistency, acceleration, all these things I preach about, right? A clean setup, looks inefficient or potential to be very inefficient, et cetera. So you'll only take on a scale of 1 to 10, you'll only take 11s. All right, so that's a recap there. I just wanted to kind of circle back to a few of those things. Number 6, I will be cognizant of my bad behaviors. Now, this is from a webinar I did a while back, but I would encourage you to look at all of these. There's not enough time to go into details in any one of them, but it's like one thing I'm going to get to in a second is, you know, when you're behaving badly, okay? Now, but Dave, I just started trading. Okay, you get a pass. But if you do all these things I tell you to do, and then you start doing things outside of them or micromanaging and all these other things that are bad behaviors, then you need to recognize, hey, I know I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. System surfing, grail chasing, trading the arcane or esoteric. It's just a lot of people out there chasing the Holy Grail. I would encourage you to do all the, be promiscuous, and this is not necessarily I don't think that I've came up with this original thought, but somebody once said, be promiscuous in your research, okay, but then be prudent in your analysis, have a solid plan in place, know what you're doing. You know, I saw Toby Crable speak in 95, I think, and he was showing these new systems he was going to add on to his existing systems, and he projected that these would be his results, but he was waiting another 6 months before implementing them. And there's no way in hell I could wait another 6 months. If I had something I thought worked, I would have started using it really soon. But I was blown away by this discipline. Like, he was going to wait a whole another 6 months to make sure everything behaved like he thought it should. Okay, 6 months more research before putting it into practice. And so that's just a beautiful thing. Recreational trading, that's probably going to be a resolution in and of itself. I'm guilty of that sometimes. You know, it's like I'm here all day, I got tons and tons of work to do, might not feel like doing the work. Next thing you know, I'm looking at the screen, getting myself into trouble. So you need to find your recreation elsewhere. My wife calls me hobby boy, so I try to walk away and do something hobbyish or something if I really need a break. Living and dying by the sword, you know. The trade you just took or the trade you're about to take is hopefully you're in this business a long time, is going to be one of the next 1,000 or one of the next 10,000 trades. And it is what it is, okay? You have to really be flippant, as I preach, and be willing to just say, well, that's it. Shrug your shoulders. If there's anything to learn from it, learn from it. If there's nothing to learn from it, move on, okay? Should happen sometimes. Blaming others, not owning it. You know, I'm not the grand poobah, but when I get an email telling me how bad I suck and I'm doing well, now sometimes I flat out suck, okay? But if I'm doing pretty good, you know, and my account shows it, and the hypothetical service shows it, and all the other things I'm doing are doing really great, then I'm like, well, wait a minute. It's maybe it's not me that's the problem. You know, sometimes it is. But, you know, if you're missing a few trades that would have made your year, you can't hold me accountable for that. So you have to, you really have to own it. You really have to hold yourself accountable. And that is tough. Not honoring your stops, obviously, that's pretty obvious. Revenge trading, sometimes, you know, you're short a market and you get stopped out. And you're like, well, F it, I'm going to go long this market, you know, and then you get stopped out. And before you know it, you get into a lot of trouble. Hyperactivity, you know, that goes back to take 11s. Okay, that's going to fix that. Micromanagement, busting the plan, not having a plan to begin with. Here's a big one. And I think we've all done this. And if you haven't, you know, because I'm talking to two different people here. I'm talking to the existing people with lots of knowledge and understand all this that need a little refresher, as do I, or a reminder, I should say, some of these things. And I'm talking to other people who are just getting started, okay, and trying to let you know it's gonna be bumpy here and there, but you could do it. But once you have a little bit of experience, and this is one thing that I've done many times, trust me, I could almost guarantee you I'll do it again at some point. But you take these, I knew I shouldn't have taken that trades, okay? You ever take a trade and you're stopped out like immediately? And then you first thing you say is, I knew I shouldn't have taken that trade. And you truly knew you shouldn't have taken that trade. So yeah, it's in hindsight you shouldn't have taken it, but it's also like, it's foresight in hindsight. You knew you shouldn't have taken a trade, but you did it anyway. Again, sometimes you know not to do these things, but you do them anyway, like Paul. So coming to extraneous influences, I'm gonna get to that one in just one second. As I've said ad nauseum, my wife works outside of the house, but it comes in spurts. It's like, so she might be gone all day, but then most of the other times she might just be gone a few hours, or she might be here all day. And most of the time she's here. And it seems like every time I walk in the house, I'm hit with some sort of financial problem. You know, taxes are due, or you know, whatever. My check engine light is on, or whatever, you know. And that, you know, I'm trying to get out of the office for a few minutes to take a break, and then I get hit with that. And sometimes I come back in and I feel this pressure to try to take that money out of my trading account, try to make that money, okay? And the market doesn't care what your financial needs are. And believe me, there's always a freaking expense. Failing to document, we'll beat that dead horse in upcoming resolutions. Confusing the issue with facts, you know, we'll talk about that when we get to news. But someone sent me a very critical email a while back, because we were trading and there was tariffs that were being put on. And it's like, well, you shouldn't trade because of tariffs, and the tariffs can do this and tariffs can do that. It's like, well, look at where the market is now, and look at the market was back when all the tariffs were coming out and everything. And it's like, well, hang on, the market kind of honey badgered that. It didn't care. Right? So if you start factoring in, it's like, okay, well, how much tariff is too much, or how much is enough, or you know, you try to quantify all that and connect all those dots, and you just can't connect all those dots. What is, and that's probably another one I'll come back to, is look at the charts. What's the charts doing? What is. Technical analysis doesn't lie. Technical analysis doesn't tell you what should be. Technical analysis tells you what is. I never dreamed gold would be up. Gold stocks would go up 100% over the last 6 or 8 months, you know? So confusing the issue with facts, giving credence to the situation in Nigeria, again, you know, tariffs, whatever the case may be. Trading out of a position, that's a losing position, okay? It's like, oh, it hit the stop, but let me just see if I can trade out of it. Okay, you could use a little bit of discretion, a tiny bit, okay? But if you know you need to be out, then you need to be out of the position. Trading not to lose, I'm guilty of this one. And it's a fine line, especially like with the intraday stuff. Now, I'm not trading not to lose with the bigger picture swing to intermediate term type of patterns, like the ones I just showed you, like GLUE and TGC, TFPM. MDLN, et cetera. But trading not to lose is like, okay, you're looking at a market that's kind of bottoming out a little bit or whatever. And you're like, I'm going to buy it right here and put a stop right below that low. Okay. Well, you're almost guaranteed to get stopped out. And if you don't put in an actual stop, excuse me, before you know it, you could be the deer in the headlights, and that little tiny loss that you were trading not to lose, I call it TNTL, could get you a lot of trouble. And that's another case of the come back to the 11s. I'm pretty excited I made that 11 little clock, and I actually hand drew one in my digital tablet, and I cut and paste it. I'm doing that on every trade now, kind of practice what I preach, right? And so I'll put that in there. And if you're trading not to lose, you know, you could have like a 3 or something on that gauge that goes to 11, right? So that's trading not to lose. And now there's S&G trades too. Every now and then I'll buy very cheap options, okay, that are very close to expiration. And that's a gamma type of play. You got to be careful with that. And that's another one of the things I'm going to talk about in upcoming webinars, again, probably, is you can't get a little bit pregnant. So you got to be really careful with those S&G type of trades. Dealing in mediocrity, I've beat the dead horse on that so many times. It's we can't help it because we can't, as I've said 1,000 times, we can't wait for the fat pitch in life. We can't wait for the client to come along that's the perfect client. We've got to take every train wreck, quoting Dr. J, a psychiatrist that's a client of mine. We have to take every train wreck that comes along. Otherwise, we'd be out of business very soon. A doctor friend of mine, he sent me a picture. I said, he told me what his morning looked like. And he sent me a picture of it. And it was a woman's leg was, I don't know if it was swollen or she was just a sturdy girl, but it was solid black. Okay. And it was it almost makes me my stomach turn talking about it. I got to get through this quickly because I'll start gagging. But it was nasty. And he's like, if I operate on this woman, it could cause her to lose her leg. If I don't operate on this woman, she will lose her leg. So he can't wait for somebody to come in with some little bobo, you know, it's like, oh, well, you just need one little stitch there. Let me just do that. He's going to take whatever train wreck again comes along. Trading outside of your time frame or methodology, you spend hours and hours and hours and hours and years working on a methodology, and then, you know, some little shiny object comes along, you do that, or you get sucked into day trades. I get sucked into day trades sometimes. I am guilty. I'm trying to do less and less. When I do less and less and less and less and less, I could actually wait for the market to come to me and make a little money. Not every day, but over time, every now and then things set up just right. And if I could just wait for that, for the intraday stuff, I would do just fine. I don't always do that, okay? Number 7, I will only take trades when conditions are conducive to my methodology. Now, there's a few caveats to that, okay? Unless you think you have the mother of all setups. So what I'm saying is conducive, you want the market to be trending, you want the sector to be trending, you want the stock to be trending, you want stocks within the sector to also be trending. Sexy sisters or sexy brothers, whatever you're into. If you're into both, you're a bit of a greedy bastard, but that's another conversation. You want to make sure you have, if you don't have the all three, right? You want to make sure you have a decent looking stock that can trade in lieu of conditions. I don't remember exactly what the market was back in April or May. I don't think it was a fantastic back then, but we had those gold stocks setting up, okay? And they looked pretty good. They were decent setups. Gold can trade contra to the overall market because it's commodity based. So that was probably some of the reasoning that went into that. And sometimes just have a great looking setup that could defy gravity or whatever. That's a different, you know, maybe like an IPO or something. Now, another case might be you have a transitional setup that could be leading the market, okay? So sometimes, especially like after an extended bear market, the market's still going down, but some new leaders begin to emerge. Now, I'm not saying bottom fish, wait for that bow tie, wait for that first thrust, wait for one of those transitional patterns before getting in. Now, when I did this presentation, this particular one prior, I had a chart where we didn't have any trades for a while during an extended market, extended choppy market. So I wanted to keep this more relevant, more recent. So I went back to the last trade, which was back in November. And then I looked at the next trade since. Okay. And then there was quite a bit of time where there were no trades and no triggers. Many days it was like no trades, no trades, no trades. Maybe an honorable mention if you felt like you really had to do something, but I personally was not going to take it. And so you can see this is almost 2 months of no trades and no triggers, or certainly more than a month. And then I found the glue stock, or I like the glue stock, so I took that trade and also recommended it. So that's another one of the nuances, that it's a trend following methodology. And if the market is doing this, looking like an electrocardiogram like it did back in November, December, then there's not a lot to do. Now, here's a big one. I will identify and accept extraneous influences. And man, are there a ton of those. So I'm sitting here putting my slides together, getting ready to do this presentation. My wife walks over to the office. My office is part of the main house, but it's a separate door. There's only one way in and out. I literally have to walk down a porch to go home, or walk down the porch to come to work, to come to my office. I try to make a dichotomy to where it's like I'm going to work, I'm home from work, okay? Which is something important to do, but that's another story altogether. But anyway, my wife walks over and she's got a look at her face. I'm like, oh shit, what's wrong? You know, my father-in-law has advanced Alzheimer's, and he was trying to leave the house again. And so my mother-in-law wanted to bring him over here because he wanted some kind of outing. He wanted to come over here, whatever. So she was just kind of giving me a heads up. They're on their way over here. And so it's like, okay, so that's something going on in my head. That's an interruption. That's something to deal with. We had a similar interruption like that yesterday. And it doesn't always have to be something major. And a lot of times, little minor things. Like I talked about, I found some old slides where I had my pictures of my puppy we got about a year and a half ago. And that was affecting my sleep. And then I've got to walk the dog and when my wife's not here, and do all these different things. And so there's a lot of things that are extraneous to the market. And Tom McClellan's late mother, Marion McClellan, once said, paraphrasing, people buy and sell stocks for a variety of reasons. Some people buy when they have money. Some people sell when they need money. And other people use more sophisticated methods. So you get in a fight with your spouse, significant other, or both, you know, and you come in and like, I'll show her. And you know, you short the market and the market's going up and he's like, well, she'll never know, you know. Or again, you know, I get hit with a tax bill, or I get hit with this bill or that bill or whatever the case may be. Sometimes I feel like I want to try to pull it out of the market. And that's a bad idea, okay? The money will come to you if I can nearly guarantee that. If you are disciplined for a long time and you have a solid methodology that's conceptually correct, something simple like Landry-like pullbacks, it doesn't have to be complex, better if it's not, okay? And I didn't invent the pullback. Some guy came up to me once in 1999 or early, I think it was, might have been late 1999 or early 2000. That pullback thing you invented put three of my daughters through college. It's just like, well, I didn't invent the pullback, but thank you very much. All right, I will commit to commitment devices. I have beat the dead horse on this one, but it's so important, okay? A commitment device is a choice you make in the present that controls your actions in the future. And that's from James Clear. James Clear, it kind of dovetails in with Acrasia. I noticed that, just had to be noticed, this article is about Acrasia, which is pretty good. I would read that article. That's the link right there. I can put it in, down below and post. It's just jamesclear.com/acrasia. Now, commitment devices could be really simple, okay? An extreme example would be Victor Hugo with the Moby Dick, okay? So allegedly, I forget the exact story, but kind of just summing it up, Victor Hugo got a big advance to do Moby Dick, and I think he partied like a rock star and he had a lot of fun. I think he spent most of his money, and the publisher was like, you might have to pay us back if you don't eventually give us a book. I think it was a Hunchback of Notre Dame, not Moby Dick. I get them all confused. I meant to look at it up again. But anyway, he chained himself to his desk and it just wore sackcloth or whatever until he was done with the book. And that stopped him from he just by wearing a sackcloth, he wasn't to go party with his friends or whatever. And so hopefully I don't have those two mixed up, but you get the idea, right? He took some drastic step. Now it's better off if you don't do something drastic. The smaller the better when it comes to that. And I've talked about this a thousand times. The friends that were we have some friends, this couple, and they go on their triennial diets. And every time they go on their triennial diet, they end up fatter than they were because it's such a drastic change. If they just were, now I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm willing to bet, and this has worked for me, and I'm going to let you in a little secret here. If you move a little more and eat a little less, you're going to become healthier and you can lose some weight. Do I do those things? Not all the time. But keep it small. I mean, I'd beat the dead horse on this, but a friend of mine, also a trader, many, many years ago, was getting a little pudgy. And he found a kid, somebody he knew, who was really into working out. And he made him a deal. He says, look, I'm going to pay you a gym membership. All I want is a ride to the gym. I will sit on my front porch at 7 o'clock every morning. Pick me up, give me a ride to the gym. Now, if I'm not sitting on that swing on my front porch, I'm going to pay you $20 for every day I'm not out there. So if he decides, my friend that is, to skip a workout, it's going to cost him $20. Maybe it's worth it, maybe it's not. But in his head, he's kind of training his brain to do those things. Somebody call me Old Faithful in the gym because I'm there every day. And I'm not there long, maybe 30 minutes if I'm lucky, every weekday at least. I'm not disciplined, okay? Well, how do you, but you go every day. Surely you're disciplined. No, stop calling me Shirley. But what I do is when I wake up, I have my gym clothes on under this. this is what I wore to the gym, and I just threw a coat on before I did my show. But wake up, put on your clothes. It's like if you can't find your shoes or whatever you need to go to the gym, then before you know it, it's too late to go to the gym, or there's always an excuse, right? But just take some kind of small action that puts you closer to that behavior until it becomes a habit. Mr. Clear would probably be better to talk about habits. He wrote Atomic Habits than me, but you kind of get the idea. Still can't exercise. One example was given, what's his name? Dr. Robert Maurer had a client, couldn't lose weight, couldn't lose weight, couldn't lose weight. And he's like, well, what do you like to do? It's like, wow, I like to watch a lot of TV. And he's like, okay, I'll tell you what. I want you to, tonight, when you watch TV, I want you to stand for just one commercial. Okay. So when a commercial comes on, I want you to just one commercial, stand for that one commercial, then you can sit back down. And tomorrow night, I want you to stand for two commercials and so on and so forth, and then eventually stand for all the commercials. And then so she started marching doing a commercial. So she's sitting down watch TV, a commercial comes on, she just marches the entire time, marches in place doing the commercials. Well, before long, she ended up starting jogging and she started running marathons. Now, I'm not saying go out and run marathons and go jogging or whatever, but come up with something small that you could do to get you to begin to commit to making these things happen. And again, as I alluded to a second ago, because of our homeostasis means that our bodies try to keep us at a certain temperature and we can't make these drastic changes. Our brain is very resistant to that down at a primal level, okay? And that's why these people who go on these fad diets end up fatter than they were. Case in point, there's been many articles. I watched a documentary, it was horrible, on the documentary was good, but the subject was horrible on the Biggest Losers. Okay. And like they use and abuse these people. And yeah, they lost a shit ton of weight, but most of them gained it all back. And some of them gained it all back. And then some, a lot of them did. There's plenty of articles out there. I'd encourage you to look into that. But that's a prime example of what happens when you do something really drastic. Wind the clock. Where's my clock? See, I got to find my clock now. So I do as I say, not as I do. That's a little clock I bought off of eBay many, many years ago. A little probably out of a Cessna or something, an old clock. And Greg Morris, it's kind of a long story, but I told, you know, Greg asked me, he goes, what are you going to talk about for 4 hours? You know, uptrends, downtrends, because I was at a presentation next day at Traders Expo. We were having dinner the night before. And I said, well, Greg is also sideways, you know. And I said, seriously, I said, I'm going to talk about this, talk about that. I said, I'm going to talk a little bit about how that you're, from a neurological standpoint, sometimes it only takes a few seconds to stop you from doing something emotional. The emotional part of your brain reacts very quickly. That's neurology. If you're getting ready to step off in front of a cab in New York City or wherever, your brain's going to go, hey, step back. You know, your brain's not going to go, why is this guy coming at me? He doesn't like me. Or you know, you're just going to have that reaction. Anyway, long story endless, Greg said that, and this is also in Investing with a Trend, his book. He said that, one of his books, he said that, he goes, wind the clock. And it's like, what do you mean? He goes, well, when he was in the fighter pilot training in the simulator, they mess with your head. And he kept failing because the alarms and buzzers and everything's going off. And your initial mode is to panic. And somehow he figured out, I don't know how, but somehow he figured out. And back then the clocks, you'd actually wind them. They weren't digital, whatever. But he would reach in and it reached to the dash and he would wind the clock. And that split second of doing that allowed his brain to reset and put him back into the mode of, okay, now what do I have to do? And he told me that years later, when he was in commercial, flying commercial jets, one jet lost an engine. And the co-pilot was like, you want me to shut it off? And Greg's like, hold on, you know, so Greg touches the dash or whatever. He does whatever he needs to reset himself. And he goes, no, let's just let it be. Let's see what happens. And if it catches fire, then we'll shut it down. And they were on an approach. So let's say that they panicked and it's like, oh, the engine went out. Let's shut it down so it doesn't catch fire or whatever. If they would have done that and accidentally shut down the wrong engine, they would have crashed, okay? But fortunately, they said, okay, let's assess the situation. Engine's out, but it doesn't look like it's a fire. Let's just go ahead and let's put this plane on the ground and deal with everything. And then nobody behind him, the 100 and something passengers or everyone behind him, I forget how many, nobody was the wiser. They had a very good landing. And it was cool because... there was a big wig. I don't know if it was the head, but it was a big wig of the FAA was sitting in the jump seat behind him. And after they landed, the guy slapped Greg on the back and said, nice job, Captain, and walked out. So, and then like he had to go through all these FAA meetings and they were grilling him and all. And finally, Greg got tired of all the questions. And he said, he wrote down the guy's name. He goes, call this guy and talk to him. He said, that was the end of the questions. Walk in the office trade. Oh my God. I've made so many bad trades by going out of the office, getting a little breakfast, getting a little lunch, coming in feeling much better than I did before. I was a little sugar low. And then all of a sudden everything looks great. And I make some stupid trade I shouldn't. So when I walk into the office now, my small, tiny commitment device is right. I write WITO. So I walked in the office. So if I make a trade immediately afterwards, I probably, after walking in, it's probably going to be a bad trade, a losing trade. So again, commitment device, excuse me, too much breakfast before I came in here. They can be really small. In fact, it's better if they're not. Wind the clock. Wait 30 seconds at least when you walk into the office, you know, before doing something stupid. Review your process sheet, your bad behavior sheet, all these different things. If you're brave, have someone hold you accountable. I've told the story 1,000 times. I had one client that, in some cases, he was better than me following my methodology. Like, he would follow everything to a T, and he did really well, was super disciplined. But he would blow up every now and then, or a little bit, you know, small accounts, but blow up nonetheless by taking trades that he shouldn't, day trading and doing all these other things. And I said, look, why don't you tell your wife, look, I'm following this Dave Lander guy. Sometimes he's great, sometimes he's not, but overall he does okay. I'm going to follow him to a T, and I'm going to show you all the trades. I'm going to show you the recommends. I'm going to show you how I took the trades and show you how everything went. And I said, you know, and obviously if you're doing trades outside of what I'm doing, you need to explain those to her and show her those trades and show them how they turned out. And so when I got through saying all that, he says, oh no, that would end the marriage. So, you know, that's one of the things I'm going to talk about a lot, is you know what you're doing wrong. Okay. So you want to make sure, you know, so the answer is don't do that. So create a process sheet. This is one I found that I did by hand. And obviously you could do your own, and ideally you want to, just like a professional athlete or whatever, you want to make sure you exercise, your diet is as good as could be. My diet's not fantastic, but I try a little every now and then, but I definitely get in the exercise. Okay. So you want to be at your best. You want to have some rest and relaxation. Okay. You have to acknowledge and accept those extraneous influences again, okay, and pick the best, leave the rest. You have to see things from a detached standpoint, okay? And that's where last week I talked about sell me your setup. Like, okay, so if there's nobody around, even if it sounds kind of quirky, talk out loud. I like the acceleration. I like the persistency. This is a good-looking setup. I'd be stupid not to take it, okay? This is an 11, and this is why it's an 11. Now, if it fails miserably, go back and look at it again. If it's still an 11, then you did the right thing. If you feel like I knew I should have taken the trade, as I just said, then by, you know, all means. You might be wrong. That I can guarantee. Except the fact that you're discounting the future. And as Greg says, a lot of shit can happen between now and then. Amen. Okay. A tweet, the tariff, you know, all kinds of stuff can muck up your trades. Believe me. Plan the trade a plan, have your initial profit target, all these different things. Living with your decisions is the hard part. Very easy to make a decision, very hard to live with it. Now, if you have a positive outcome, make sure you're separating skill from luck. Annie Duke talks about resulting. Resulting is very dangerous, okay? You know, it's like I didn't die. Like the Jeep people, they have the little stickers, you know, but did you die? Like you did this crazy thing or whatever. Well, one time you might die. It's like, I can't watch those free solo shows, you know, because every now and then one of those guys dies. Fortunately, if we use proper money management and all, we could live to fight another day. He who fights and runs away lives to fight another day. But anyway, learn to separate luck from skill. I know sometimes I get lucky and I just thank the market gods and it's like, I won't do that again. Okay. We are quick, according to Annie Duke, to attribute luck to skill, and then we are also quick to attribute a negative outcome to bad luck, and you got to be careful with those, okay? So if you do have a negative outcome, he's like, yeah, shit happens, right? And then, no, it's like, well, you should have, where was I going with that? Did you do all these things? Did you follow all of these things? Okay. Picking the best, following the plan, et cetera, et cetera. If you did, then it's okay. Okay. That's bad luck. All right. But if you didn't and you lost money, then shame. Be better. Don't let the market train you to be a bad trader. And believe me, the market is one of the worst teachers. And that's something that I talk about quite a bit. All right, let's shift gears. Any questions at all, Ad? I know I kind of went on and on and on. Chief Ullman really wound up today. We'll take a look at crypto. There's not a tremendous amount to do in crypto, but crypto is beginning to improve. And one thing I've been saying is I need to make sure that I am really paying attention to crypto and doing my homework. Must be President Woman, right? Let's go here. Okay, I haven't announced too many crypto trades lately. Last one I announced was SQD. It was kind of bottoming out, and I'm still long this one. But as the crypto market improves, I will start announcing more and more of my trades. Bitcoin, the Mac Daddy of them all, is trying to bottom out. Okay. It still looks kind of ugly longer term, right? But short to intermediate term, it is trying to bottom out. I would not rush out and buy it just yet, but let's see how it shakes out. As I've said ad nauseum, sometimes when the market is blowing and going, and now's not exactly that time, but when Bitcoin's doing really well, sometimes you can come in here and just buy these altcoins that are going straight up. Now, you got to be careful. You got to make sure there's plenty of volume. And ideally, you want to see them breaking out to like brand new highs. And you're not going to see a whole lot of brand new highs given the nature of the market. Like that's one right there. But anyway, now's not the time to play that game, but it can be done when the market is doing well. And every now and then, there's been, like I said, I bought that SQD and I played it not too long ago. I played this little breakout here. And then we had this kind of a first thrust, kind of a Landry-like pullback and triggered into it here. And so far, it hasn't worked out, but there's not a whole lot to do just yet in crypto. But again, like I just said, you need to do your homework every day. All right, I'm going to shift gears and hop into stocks, unless there's any crypto questions. And I'll let, if you're on YouTube, which is a little slower, there's a little bit of a lag, we can come back to it if there's something you want to look at. All right, so just FYI, just happens to be up, so we'll take a look at it real quick. Here's the Landry 100. And what's losing today? It looks like some biotechnology is getting whacked. Semiconductors appear to be doing okay, at least based on that one. So you can see there's a few stocks. And see, these are inefficient stocks. Again, look at the moves in some of these stocks and look at the percentage since they've been tracked. 300% AXTI. This is not an efficient stock, right? This is an inefficient stock because it's going up like 2,700%. And that move obviously was not priced into the market. Let's take a look at the overall market and we'll drill down a little bit. If there's any individual issues you want me to look at, let me know. I'll be happy to do that. The Ps, S&P 500. We got a nice little gap today, which puts us right below all-time highs. I wasn't very happy with yesterday's action, but when you're close to all-time highs, a big up day or a big down day can make all the difference in the world. I'd like to see us make some new highs and not look back for a while. But longer term, we're still looking okay in the Ps. NASDAQ Composite's been a little bit more iffy. It's been a little toppy looking, but it's hanging in there, okay? And yesterday was a bit of a bummer because it sold off after failing to break out, and now it's pushing back up towards the top of this range. So hate to use the word hope, but hopefully it'll keep on keeping on. Now, Russell 2000 is the honey badger of indices. Look at that, accelerating higher. This is exciting, okay? So this is smaller cap stocks. So this is where a lot of our bread and butter is, okay? So this is a very, very, very good sign. I'd feel a lot better if the NASDAQ would join in the party. But this is a very good sign. This is a very good thing. EFA shares, those are foreign stocks right here at all-time highs. That's obviously a good thing. Let's take a look at gold, the commodity, just shy of all-time highs. That's looking pretty darn good. Those radio guys were finally right. You know, buy gold, it's going up, it's going to go up, it's going to go up. It's like, okay, well, you were finally right, but why did you sell it? You know, it's just scratching my head on that one. Anyway, gold stocks right at all-time highs. If we close where we are today, broker-dealer, look at that accelerating higher. That's looking pretty darn good. Kind of chopped around for a while. Notice that it broke down out of the base. Looked like a major top was in place, and then it took right back off. I've talked about that before. Sometimes if you have a base, that a high-level base, if it breaks down, in earnest, okay, you could actually buy it when it takes off the top of the range, and that'll test out. Now, that's not a trading system in and of itself. It's just something I've observed empirically over the years, and it seems to work. And that's what happened there. Biotechnology was off to the races about a week ago, but it's come back in. It still looks pretty good longer term. I just like to see it keep on keeping on for a while. And that's the Landry 100. It's weird with the biotechnology because I think we had like 26 in the Landry 100. And what's happening is it's like we get knocked out of a few of them that are starting to look kind of ugly. And sometimes they just implode. But then a few more come in, and the biotechnology is doing okay overall in the Landry 100. Take a quick look at that. Let me know if there's any stocks or markets you want me to look at real quick before we finish out. We should be done in just a few minutes. Let's take a look at the – so here's the biotechnology. Okay, so there's one that's – let's see. There's one up 186%. So there's some decent gains. There's 114%. That's glue. We're long that. But you can see that. Let's see, like this one's getting, let's see what's getting whacked in biotechnology. Well, this one here is getting whacked a little bit. Okay. Still looks okay longer term, but it's getting whacked a little today. So that's what's been happening in biotech. There seems to be a little bit of rotation that's starting to happen. But what's cool is that new good stocks are coming back into the rotation. As I said, I know I was in the years ago, I walked into the gym, reception's like, quite a lot of face. I'm like, I'm in a bunch of bad stocks. Let's sell them and buy some good ones. I was like, okay. That's all you got to do? Well, turns out she was right. It's all you got to do. Mags is looking kind of ugly. That's kind of a head and shoulders top or squirrel sitting on a man's head. Whatever the Scott Adams thing is. Rest in peace, Scott Adams. Probably talk a little bit about him in upcoming weeks. How to fail at everything and still succeed. I haven't read the Reframe Your Brain, but I have it on my list. I didn't realize he wrote another book. But that How to Fail at Everything book is pretty good. I've quoted it a few times. All service stocks. Look at that. All-time highs. Not going to argue with that. A little wide and loose. I mean, but that's all service. But looking pretty good. We might see some setups there fairly soon. Major drugs getting whacked today. Look pretty darn good longer term, though. Kind of looks like a just a bit of a knockout move today. I wouldn't get too excited about that. But obviously, we'll keep an eye on it. Robotics and AI, all-time highs. Silver. Look at that. Boy, that's been melting up as of late. They were right about silver, too, right? Why did they sell it? I don't know. Look at those semiconductors. Big update today. They're close. If they can hang on to these levels, that's all-time high. So that's looking pretty darn good. Some of these rare earths, I called something a rare earth the other day. I was corrected on it. Lithium is not a rare earth, but it's on Earth and it's rare. How's that? Uranium, look at that. Banging out some new highs with vigor. So the metals pretty much overall. Copper's doing well. Quite a few others. Financials, bit of a bummer. They off to the races. They came all the way back in. Now they're trying to get back out again. They don't look horrible, but obviously that's a bit of a bummer. Healthcare was kind of off to the races. It's pulled back. So it looks pretty good longer term. You know me. I like to see these markets make new highs, not look back for a while, then pull back. Kind of like the metals and mining, you see. Metals and minerals, metals and mining. Nice, solid uptrend there. So far, so good. All right, any questions, any individual stocks you guys want to look at? Okay, while we're in impasse, obviously, I want to thank all you guys and girls for attending. I promise I'm going to work on getting the word out more and next year and not making it so easy to find. But for now, you should be able to go to daveliner.com/webinar and look. There's going to be a hyperlink somewhere on that page. That's going to have the direct registration. Hopefully, we'll get all that those kinks ironed out. But you can always email me. You can always find, if you subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Dave Landry, the live shows are simulcast over there. So you can get them there. All right, going once, going twice. Obviously, I want to thank everybody for attending. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. All the guys and girls, that are here live from GoToWebinar. I think almost everybody here is in the Facebook group. Everybody else and my peeps out on YouTube and all, thank you so much. And may the trend be with you. Thank you. You're welcome.